Here.
French?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, the staff, or the public may ask that any items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have three items. A, approval of the September 11th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. Item B, approval of the appointment of Jerry Belwinka to the Planning Commission for a three-year term expiring May 31st, 2021. And C, approval of the Planning Commission for a three-year term expiring May 31st, 2021. Any comments from anyone?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda. Consent agenda is presented.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item number four is hearing citizen comments on any topic that is not an agenda item. Okay, thank you. Moving on to item six, city manager's report. Michael Kane is out of town. He's at a conference in Baltimore this week, coming off back-to-back conference in Grand Rapids. So we will hear from Cindy.
I just wanted to announce that there's now a $500 reward for information leading to the arrest and prosecution for the person or persons responsible for the graffiti at the Holiness Camp and on the city sidewalks that took place recently.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to item seven, reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. In our packet, we have the August financial statement. Any questions, commissioners, for Cindy on that? Okay. I don't believe we have any old business. So moving on to new business, item A, poverty exemption policy and guidelines.
That would be me.
Okay.
From time to time, the board review, they receive poverty exemption requests to exempt property taxes in whole or in part by reasons of poverty. The Michigan General Property Tax Act requires that local units of government adopt guidelines to set the income levels along with the asset test levels. We follow the federal guidelines just like everybody else does. The asset level sets a maximum dollar amount for the assets to be considered, while state requires that income levels not be set lower than the federal poverty guidelines. The Board of Review needs to follow these guidelines when approving or denying the request. So these guidelines, and this is a requirement, we have to have these guidelines and asset tests. So these guidelines will be updated annually to meet the statutory requirements. Anybody has any questions? I have law in front of me.
So. Cindy, is this new? Have we
have done this in the past. We should be doing it every year, and we have not. So we will be. This will be coming to you annually.
Thank you. Any comments from staff, department heads, or the public? Okay. We'll go to the board deliberation round.
Well, who asked my question? Have we done this before? I don't recollect ever having it come to a commission meeting, so I'm good with it. I assume, is it new legislation?
No. It was, I'm trying to think, it probably was around 2007 when it came to you, and the board has since followed the guidelines. We just need to do this every year. We've always followed the annual guidelines that the federal Fed set, so.
Yeah, I wonder if you had any idea how often this exemption is granted.
These individuals have to come annually. Mm-hmm. This is their request. Last year, I don't think in 2017 we had any. In 2016, we had one. We've generally had one a year for probably the last 7 or 8 years.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you?
I'm good.
I'm good too. So
make a motion the City Commission approve the poverty tax guidelines for 2018 in compliance with that state law as presented.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
French?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank
you. The next one is me as well.
Okay.
The General Property Tax Act also requires that a buyer, grantee, or other transferee to file a property transfer affidavit with the appropriate assessor of the local unit of government where the property is located. This law also provides that if the property transfer is not filed with the assessor within 45 days, we can impose a penalty of $5 a day with a maximum of $200. Our new assessor recommended, because it's such a rare occurrence, that he said 99% of your affidavits are filed timely, that it's more of a, but it's just very difficult to track. So it would be a lot easier if we would just allow us to waive any penalties, and it really would be revenue neutral for us because we haven't done it thus far. So, can't simplify it any more than that.
Okay. Is there any comments from our audience? Okay.
I'm good.
I'm good.
I am good. So, for our motion.
I move to approve a resolution waiving penalties, fees, and interest for failure to file a property tax transfer affidavit and authorize the city manager and district clerk to execute the document.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
French?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving on to item C, grant opportunity.
The Shelby County Community Foundation has their fall grant cycle. Applications are due October 1. The city manager reached out to staff and asked if we had any recommendations for projects that we might want to go after a grant for. The three items that we came up with are in your packet. Additional work on the pavilion, either providing heat, assuming that we get the other garage doors on, which we have a pending grant for that. We should know within the next week if we're going to receive that. And with the heat, the farmer's market could actually potentially go in there this winter once the heat's put in there. The other item might be interior walls for the pavilion where the kitchen area is going to go. We received a grant from the USDA for kitchen equipment. That equipment's already been purchased, and it's just in storage, and it would be nice to get it over where it needs to be. And then the other option that we thought of at the time was the Draco Viewer sculpture that's been down by the mouth of the river. Kelsey, I don't know if you want to add to that as far as the sculpture goes.
Yeah, that was kind of our, like Mark said, the three that were mainly brainstormed for. And then Barb talked to the Community Foundation about each option, and they were all eligible. Late last week from the conference, I was able to connect with some of the members of the Main Street board, and it's looking now like the pavilion options may be better to choose from, just because the Draco was kind of thought about to do fundraising for through Patronicity, which is like what Last River Draw was, so we're kind of working through that, and basically it's something maybe down the road that we'll want to go for, but not quite ready to bring that project around when there's other ones that we have to be able to ask for. So I think the members of the Main Street board that responded felt more comfortable about the pavilion.
And then certainly open to any other ideas that the commission might have.
Can you have a grant for each of the items or the pavilion, or do you have to narrow it to one?
We were only going to do one. I don't think that, I didn't ask.
Are you just going to like flip a coin then to see which one of those two?
No, that's your job. No, we brought it here, to get thoughts. There are other grant opportunities that will come up in the future. There's certainly another round of community foundation in the spring. So if we did one this time, we certainly could look at, you know, to propose the other one the next round. There's one that we've researched through, is it the Ford Foundation, Kelsey?
Yeah,
Ford Foundation. You know, that one does not have a deadline date, so we were kind of waiting to hear about some of these others we've applied for before we move forward with that one for some pavilion funds. And then the MEDC still says that they may throw their hat in the ring for some additional funding, although they've been saying that for a while now.
And it's your recommendation that we don't do the shotgun and apply for all three with the foundation and let them decide. You think it's more productive for us to make the selection?
I think so. I think that they'd like to know where our priorities are, you know, as far as the project. And I think that you could apply for the sculpture and something with the pavilion. I do think we could submit to, but if Main Street's not ready to move forward with the sculpture and support that, then there's no reason to submit an application at this time.
We've also ran into before where, depending on what the grants get classified under, you're competing against yourself. So our strategy in the past has been to choose one, so that way we can hopefully get the most money for the one we're asking for, as opposed to competing against ourselves and not getting any money, or just getting a little bit, but still not really to full implementation. So
of the two for the pavilion, which do you think is the more need at this point?
Assuming that we will receive the funding to complete the doors, I guess I think heat makes the most sense. I think the farmers market would like to feel like they could move in and have that be their home.
When you say heat, is it portable, propane heat, or is it a regular furnace with the ducts above shooting heat down, running off natural gas?
It is some type of furnace, and I can't, without Bob here, I can't describe exactly what it is, but I know that he's had different people in there looking at it to come up with some options.
You answer my question, because furnace compared to...
They're not going to be little heaters in the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Weren't they talking about something in the up in the roof ceiling in the corners that just blew a heat on?
Then we talked about that. Those are pretty noisy.
Oh.
So Bob was looking at other options.
So a furnace, I would assume, would have ductwork. So we're looking at a little more comprehensive, I would think, which you need. That's a big area.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's furnace forced air or if it's some type of radiant.
Sure.
But it's not going to be the big units that have the blowers that are really loud, like you'd have in a garage.
And I know when they remodeled, they did put our value in the attic. So
correct.
They were anticipating heat. So that's a good thing.
What's the other grant for the doors, Bart? The 24,000? Was it 24,000?
That was a community grant through the money's being passed through Networks Northwest.
Uh-huh.
It was a community growth grant, and we applied for that, and they said we would know by the end of September.
The heating solution you just discussed, is that a permanent solution or temporary?
Permanent.
Well, it seems to me this would be my first choice as far as, you know, the heating for the pavilion, and a community foundation has been close partners with us too, and we raised over $200,000 that was passed through the community foundation, so they've got a good handle on what our needs are and where we're going. And
yeah, so
looking
only,
for additional grants too, so.
Yeah, the only caveat is I don't have the numbers from Bob for the heat yet. There's going to have to be some sort of match, and I don't know what that number is. So once we apply, I would hate for us to apply and then say, we couldn't come up with the match and decline it. So there's still continuous fundraising going on. There is enough in the pavilion fund to match the grant if we were to receive the garage doors. That would not leave any funding left in the pavilion fund to match this particular grant if we were able to get it for the heat. So while the committee is going to still continue to fundraise and look for sponsorships and things like that, the city would be on the hook for the match until the committee could fundraise or come up with it. Or if they didn't come up with it, we would be on the hook for it or have to decline the grant itself.
Yeah. And we don't know.
I don't have that.
I don't know. It certainly seems to me that we, you know, as far as the matching part, the $5,000, we shouldn't have a problem with that.
If it's a $10,000 project, we're asking for $5,000. That doesn't mean we're going to get $5,000. They could come back at us and say, we like it, but we only have $2,500 to give you. That means that's that much more we have to come up with. So just because we could apply for $10,000 and they can still come back and say, we'll give you $25,000. So there's no magic number as far as cap that you can apply for. It was suggested to us that we apply for $5,000. But she also said there's a chance that you won't get the $5,000 that you applied for, depending on the other projects and the other applications that come through.
Do you think that constructing those internal walls would be come in at less cost than furnace system, I would imagine?
Or what about the scenario that we don't get the grant from Networks Northwest and we go for the furnace, but we don't have the doors up?
Would that, I think the scenario would be that they would honor the grant
from the foundation for a period of time.
For a period of time, I would think.
And the equipment could be purchased and just have to hold off on installation.
In that case, too, we would also have money in the funds for a match because that money would be tied up through the match for the Networks Northwest grant.
We've all weighed in. I would welcome any comments from our audience, staff, or the public. My first impression was the art piece because that surely gets tons of, all our guests love that. And every time I drive by there about 10 times a day, there's people gathered taking pictures, but I understand
And a similar conversation came into play there because that piece is $16,000 to purchase. And again, it's the kind of the same amount of money that you're looking at for the match, and Main Street doesn't have that for the project. So when this budget year started, there wasn't a plan for us to just buy it. You know, the whole idea has been that we'll fundraise for it using Patronicity, and we can't get the match through Patronicity like how we were able to for last River Draw because it's not a new project, but they will allow us to use that platform to fundraise in general. But the Main Street Board would feel more comfortable fundraising first and then getting grant money to close whatever gap there is, if there is one, not getting a grant that then we're on the hook for a match for of potentially, you know,
sure,
$13,500 that's not budgeted for because it's not our intention to just buy it out of budgeted funds.
Is there a time when it's going to disappear if we don't do something?
Not right now.
And then your other option is to not apply for any project. If we don't feel comfortable with the projects that we've put before you or we're not comfortable with the match, you do have that option to not apply this round.
I think we've all weighed in. Is there any other comments from commissioners? I guess I would I'd follow Ron's. Makes sense. Eat before kitchen. Can't have a kitchen if you don't have heat.
Yeah, I would think that would be the way to go. Do you have any idea what the estimate for the heating system is, though?
For the heating system? I did not get that back from Bob before.
Could it be $20,000?
I don't think so.
I know, it seems like, you know, maybe when you get more information, we leave it a little bit open and they can make a determination between the two.
Well, the grant's got to be applied for before the end of the month, October 1st.
Yeah.
So it doesn't give us much time.
I think we could give Barb direction.
Yeah.
But as you said, leave it a little bit open to her professional opinion as to, you know, if the furnace is 50,000, then we may back off.
As soon as I get those numbers back from Bob, I'll certainly, Mike, you know, we'll review that, we'll talk about it, and I'm sure he'll share it with you. And, you know, if he doesn't think from a budgeting standpoint that we can come up with it, I'm sure he would put a halt to it as well.
Well, I'd make a motion then that we apply for the purchase of a heating unit for the pavilion through the community, Shelbourne County Community Foundation, for $5,000.
Second.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to item D. The 800 megahertz radio system ballot proposal information.
Mayor, I have Pam Woodbury, and Pam's from CCE 911 Central Dispatch, and she's going to show you the presentation on the upcoming ballot proposal for November.
Pam.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it. I'm going to, like she said, I have a presentation, which I believe you have copies of. I just want to go through this with you, and then if there are any questions, this is what I'm here to answer. I know there's, you know, a lot of questions out in the community about it, so going out trying to educate and help answer those questions so that everyone is ready, you know, when it comes time to vote. And I don't have a pointer, so you have to bear with me. There we go. So first off, just to talk a little bit about CCE Central Dispatch. You know, we are the 911 emergency center for Charlevoix, Sheboygan, and Emmett counties. And and so we answer all the emergency calls from the citizens across the three counties. And then we have to dispatch out those calls to our responders so that they can get to our citizens. We do that through a radio system. I'll talk to you a little bit about what our current radio system is like. We do dispatch for 13 law enforcement agencies, 25 fire departments, 9 EMS agencies, and 11 medical first responder units across the three counties. So as I said, we have to relay that information back to the responders. And also, when our responders need help from us, they have to communicate by the radio to get through to us. So if people think about 911, I think most of the time you think about just answering that phone call. But answering the phone call is only the first part of dispatching, because we get the information from the call at that point, but the entire rest of the scenario, whatever that call may be it an armed robbery, a medical non-breather, you know, anything like that, it's all done by radio. So now we're giving the responders the information on, you know, the suspect, the direction of travel, where we're at medical-wise, we're doing CPR, all of that. And then they're coming back to us with information that they need, or when they need help, if they've got a suspect out that they're chasing or someone's attacking them. It's all by radio. The whole rest of the scenario, each and every single call we answer is by radio. And the current system that we're on is called a VHF frequency. It's a very high frequency radio system. And right now, about 30% of the time, when those responders call in and they need help, or we're trying to call out and tell a responder, I've got someone that's not breathing, whatever that call may be, about 30% of the time, that traffic is either so scratchy you can't read it, or it doesn't go through at all. So this just talks about what we're going to go through here. So on our current system here, we've been on the system since 1996, this current VHF system. What has happened, as of 2013, the Federal Communications Commission mandated that all public safety agencies narrow band their frequencies. And what narrow banding means is you decrease those frequencies. So instead of having this much bandwidth to get all that traffic through that we have to for all those emergencies, we have this much bandwidth. So we went down from what at that point was 25 kilohertz to what is now 12.5 kilohertz. At that point, it cut our efficiency in half. It did this across the state of Michigan. We'll talk about that a little bit. So it cut our efficiency in half. CCE has spent a lot of time and money trying to restore communications to the best of our ability, up to the tune of about $1 million. Pre-narrow banding, because we knew it was coming, and then post-narrow banding, because there were so many problems afterwards. So, and at this point, we still have a lot of problems, and we're still at only about 30% coverage after soaking about $1 million into this system to try and make it work. So again, it's about 70% of the time it's reliable, 30% of the time it is not. And
Pam, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why did they do that?
Because the government wanted to sell off the frequencies to commercial users. So they sold off the bandwidth to commercial users.
Did they?
And took it away from public safety. Huh. So
I imagine a lot of it because of new technologies and stuff that were demanding more.
Because there's so much
technology. Probably not an arbitrary governmental decision, but based on balancing need.
Yeah. And that's because there's so much technology, they've got to fit in there somehow. So the FCC is going to do it again. So the first round of narrow banding put us in the situation that we're in now. The FCC is going to narrow band again. They will decrease the frequencies at that point from 12.5 to 6.25, which will cut us down in half one more time. That is going to mean that approximately 65% of the time, all of our emergency transmissions of my responders trying to reach us because they have an emergency, us trying to reach them to get them to an emergency of our citizens, 65% of the time it's not going to be reliable at that point. There was a radio steering committee that was put together several years ago who did some research on all of this, trying to decide how can we fix this. So they looked through trying to build out the VHF system that we currently have even more. Again, we've already put $1 million into it. In order to build it out, to try and prepare for what's coming, you would have to put in a whole lot more towers, you would have to buy all kinds of tower equipment, all kinds of radio equipment, go inside dispatch, all kinds of new radio equipment to go to the responders out there to the tune of about $13.5 million is what the steering committee came up with. And at that point, the coverage is still being the VHF and being narrow banded at that, it would get it better, but it still would not be adequate enough for public safety. A couple examples here that I want to talk to you about. Reserve Bay Creek Fire Department gave an example on May 5th at about 11:05 p.m. Reserve Bay Creek Fire Department was dispatched to Howard Road for house fire with a possible person inside. They experienced problems getting in contact with dispatch for more information from the caller on the location of the person inside the home. So you've got the fire department going to this fire. You've got someone inside the home they believe. They can't contact us. We can't talk to them. We can't tell. We're on the phone with the caller. We can't tell them where they're at because radio communication is so bad. So for them to get inside and rescue this person, that had been very hindered. They were able to make contact later, found out, thank God, that the homeowner was out of the house before the fire was reported, so there was no one inside. So this particular incident, thank God, no one died. During the most major windstorms, they say that there are issues with the VHF system. Channel opens up and you can't communicate with anyone. We had the recent windstorms that we had. Sheboygan fire went out. The weather severely affects VHF systems. Now, being here in Charlotte Boyd County, I'm sure that most of you did hear about the shooting several years ago in 2015 where Corporal Hasty was shot here in Charlotte Boyd County. What most of you don't know, though, is that during the time period this incident was occurring, Corporal Lacy was trying to let us know that shots were being fired at him, okay? We couldn't hear him. Then, more times he tried to get through and let us know that he had been hit and he needed medical assistance. We couldn't hear him. I have a sound bite of that for you. Hopefully that will play. There are a lot of beeps in the middle, which is more static. I'll turn this on, it's too loud, I just want to make sure. This involved armed robbery and strangulation. The suspect held a knife to the victim, punched her. Suspect fled the scene in a vehicle, which was spotted by the Sheriff's Department, and they ended up in a pursuit with them. Well, it was a 32-minute pursuit that went across multiple counties, ended up in Otsego County. There was a lot of radio communication issues. They weren't able to get through to us, we weren't able to get through to them at times. Also, no ability whatsoever to talk to Otsego County. At one point, they were going down the highway. They had a state trooper right next to them, and they could not communicate with that state trooper. We could not communicate with that state trooper. There was nothing, just because they are all on 800 megahertz, which we'll talk about. All surrounding counties and almost the whole entire state of Michigan is on 800 megahertz because it is the more robust system that does not have the issues that VHF does. And so, therefore, we can't talk to them. So, and we'll talk more about that. Any questions before I move on further with this? Does anyone need to hear the rest of the audio that unfortunately didn't start at the beginning? I apologize. So 84% of Michigan is already on this. So all of the UP is on this. All of the counties surrounding us is on it. And almost the entire state is on 800 megahertz. Those that aren't on it, for the most part, are in discussions trying to get on, trying to find the funding to get on to the system due to the interoperability, which means we can talk to the other agencies. We can talk to someone at the south end of the state if we need to for some reason. And if we have emergencies and our surrounding counties got to come in and help us, or we have to go into those surrounding counties and help them, the ability to communicate is there.
Pam, what is the red where it says local radio system? How does that work?
The red is the local radio systems. They have their own system that they're working off of, and those would be ones that are in talks or trying to get moved over. But as we're showing here, it's quite an expensive venture, and so it's difficult for all counties to get on right away. So they're working on that, their own system right now.
So if this ballot proposal is approved by the voters, it has to be approved by all three counties or just
yes.
Collectively?
All three counties.
Individually, yes.
It's not a three-county millage request.
Not one single. It's in each county, yes.
So if we pass this in Charlevoix County, we've paid for our part. If it
yes.
doesn't pass another county, then they're faced with the challenge of raising the money another way, is that correct?
Yes, okay. Yes.
So it's not like the ISD millage, if it goes down in one, it goes down in all.
Yeah, the funding would be there for Charlevoix County, and then, you know, we can start building out things from there, but the other two counties would have to find a way to come up with some funding in order to be, because the subscriber equipment that's needed for our users out there to operate off of it and things like that, and yeah, we, you know, and at this point, there's really no plan B for where they're supposed to find that money.
We heard, you know, in some of the previous meetings, talking about 800 millihertz, the cost of these radios, I don't know how many radios we need for, you know, our own system, but it's something like $10,000 for a radio, is that accurate?
No. At this point, and the thing is that the subscriber equipment and stuff for the radios for our users and things are going to be put out to an RFP, so that we're going to bring the prices down as much as we possibly can from these companies. But at this point, we're looking at around $3,000 for a radio, but it is not $10,000.
So. Yeah, but you still have your communication system at home base, so too, and then everything else has to be changed over.
Well, at Central Dispatch, we already have the 800 megahertz consoles. So the consoles are there, and I'll talk a little bit about that when the state does with those.
Well, I was thinking about the city, you know, the cost of the city to come up.
City doesn't have to come up with anything. That's... So, and that's one thing that there's a lot of questions about. So the county's decided to put this millage on to pay for that subscriber equipment. That means all the villages and the townships and the cities, it's paid for. The counties are doing that for this initial setup. The purchase will be made, the talks are that the way we're gonna do it is the CC will make the one purchase, and then the equipment will go back out to all of the user agencies. They'll own that equipment at that point. So it's bought. I mean, there's nothing that the cities, villages, or townships have to come up with because counties found that it was a huge price and that was a bill that would be very difficult for the cities, townships, and villages to handle. So that's what this millage is about, is to help that, help the counties, the townships, and so forth to be able to pay for this. One of the questions that I found is that then the cities and villages there are worried about coming up with replacements and things like that down the road. So what we're working on is negotiating a minimum of a 5-year contract warranty so that for the next 5 years everything's covered. So anything that needs to be replaced, it'll be replaced. That means that everyone has 5 years to start to work on a budget so that they can replace radios when they need them. The other concern is people feel like, oh, do they have to come up with another, you know, $6 million worth of equipment right away and at the end of 5 years when that warranty's up? Well, the warranty being up does not mean that the radios don't work. On this system, it's robust. It's built out to deal with future technologies for the 800 system. And there will be new technologies come out. And if the agencies and the cities and everyone decide that they want to buy some more equipment that's a higher technology, they can do so. They can budget for that for 5 years. But it doesn't even mean that that technology is run out. What happens is, at 5 years, the warranty is done. If a radio goes bad, you might need to buy one. So right now, everybody budgets to have to buy, you know, 2, 3, whatever radios a year, just in case. And that's the same thing that they'll have to do in 5 years when this warranty is up, is just make sure you budget it to have 1 or 2 or 3, whatever, that might go bad. It does not have to be bought out right away. These radios last a very long time. So getting you started with that just puts you in a position where you're at right now, where you have to just budget for some replacements here and there in 5 years.
That's good to hear.
Well, that's why I'm trying to come around and talk to everyone so they understand that. Because that's a big worry thinking you have to come up with that kind of money.
And we've all created a new distribution center. It's just that at the beginning you said, you know, the 11 different police departments, the 23 different fire departments. Are the central, they just get new equipment basically.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Everybody gets the new equipment that they need to operate off of that system. That's part of this. So.
So how much is the millage going to be? 1 mil or half a mil or?
For each county it's different. They all did it a different way. And let me pull that up. Because I didn't put that in this PowerPoint. But for each county, it is different according to what they needed, because the way it's split up is like, so the infrastructure portion that has to be built up. We're actually really lucky up here because of the way it's ruled up here. The state actually already built out a pretty huge infrastructure up north. So we don't have to build out tons of towers like the other counties do when they get started. Like Eaton County, one single county, it cost them $20 million because they had to build out towers that weren't there. So we're going to be able to use, the state's towers are already here, but we do have to build out a few more for the lower lying areas and those dips that we got to deal with in order to get through to that. So there's an infrastructure portion in order to make our terrain work, and that portion is being split four ways. CCE is paying a quarter, and all three counties are paying a quarter. So that's split evenly because everyone's going to touch that infrastructure and use it. As far as the subscriber equipment goes, that is being divided up according to the county. So Charlevoix County is only asking for or paying for the users in Charlevoix County. Same for Edmond, same for Sheboygan. So that portion is being split up that way. So they have different amounts, and they did it according to what works for their counties. Grab my folder.
Well, it just seems to me if it's less than $1 million, it would probably pass. But.
Sure. I think that, and I will have to double check, but Charlevoix County did do it for 3 years, that I do know. And theirs is about $4.17 a month per a $100,000 taxable value property. And I believe theirs was half a mil for 3 years.
Half a mil for three years.
And I'll have to double check that for sure. But the, as far as the taxable value on what they have, that's about four, and it's about $4.17 a month. It's a dollar for a week. It's less than a cup of coffee a week for the radio system. It's way less than a Starbucks cup of coffee. So the 800 MHz system in the other counties that have this, it did increase radio communication reliability for them to 96% above, whereas we're standing at 70% right now. It improved interoperability. Again, that is the ability to talk to other agencies. One of the things that we had here in Charlevoix County this last spring, emergency management did this big exercise that included Coast Guard, National Guard, things like that, to plan for mass disasters and things. And emergency management had to get 800 MHz radios from the state in order for them to communicate because they couldn't communicate. So, because Coast Guard, National Guard, DNR, everybody's on it. And it improved their strength and their coverage areas, and it did enhance first responder efficiency and safety for them.
There's a big tower there at the Straits, Mackinac Bridge. How far does that, did they utilize that for the counties?
The MPSCS tower up there, or the state tower up there?
Is it on the bridge?
Is that, well, there's one south of the bridge, and there's some north of the bridge as well.
I was thinking on top of the bridge, it's 580 feet above the water.
That's not a bad, I don't know how that works, but that's something I don't know.
Well, it just seemed to me that they could certainly put an antenna there.
Seems like they could reach a long ways off of that.
Yeah.
I might have to bring that up. I don't know how that works. So, coverage area for Charlevoix, Sheboygan, and the counties then, this is what the map looks like. And I have the next slide I have explains what these, but there's purple, yellow, and white. White does not mean there's no coverage. The way they did the testing was they did a portable on the hip and they had a mic on the shoulder. So that is like the way that most people use it, most users use it. And it's also the way that is not the strongest at all, so least strong. So because if they put portable in the mouth, it would be stronger. If they use mobiles, it would be stronger. So, but they did hip and microphone. So the white just means that because they tested it and it had to be 95 times out of 100 that it went through. And it was under 95 times in the white areas. And they, I'm going to move down to the next one just like, it's not on there. But the purple is the portable at hip, in-house, in building, and the yellow that was on there, and I can't get back to Mount Yellow that was on there, is portable on the street. So the coverage puts us at 96% and above in our counties as opposed to the 70% that we're at right now. And just the interoperability, like we talked about, that it gives us the ability to talk to the outside agencies and the other agencies that are on it, gives us much better ability to speak to each other. Really have to give me a pointer. So the total cost of this across all three counties is $10.3 million. That gives us more towers, more channels, tower top amplifiers, all the equipment that we need, plus the first responder equipment, which is going to be your portables, your mobiles, your base stations, your marine radios, all those things that we need. So that's the total project across all three counties. And again, I talked to you about how they divided it. So and that is less than the VHF option, which wouldn't even give us the type of coverage we had with this. So all of our sheriffs have put together a statement stating our current radio system is obsolete and presents serious safety issues for our citizens and for our law enforcement, fire, and EMS agencies. Radio communication is more important than ever because today's events can unfold at an alarmingly rapid fashion. Fires, floods, crimes in progress, shootings, weather emergencies, and other events can put law enforcement, fire, and EMS into the test at any given time. The 800 MHz public safety radio system would provide the technological answer to that test. And again, that is Sheriff Bondro, Sheriff Claremont, and Sheriff Whalen across all three counties. And this is where I open it up to whatever questions that you might have. So if you have anything at all, please ask me. And if you think of something later, please get a hold of me, and I'm more than welcome to talk to you about it.
I just had a quick question. It's probably nothing much, but when I was downstate, when they transferred over into the Rapids area, it was allowed them to use scanners over the internet. Is that the same technology, or? And they never been, like, somebody could download an app and then they could listen to the traffic, is that...
When they narrowbanded, you mean?
Yeah, well, when they just went to the 800 megahertz, it was like...
Like anybody could do that?
Like there was apps out there for the dispatch you could listen to.
It might be if they're not encrypted.
Yeah.
But that's...
It wasn't encrypted, but it was like just general traffic.
Yeah. If it's not encrypted, people can kind of tap into... VHF and all those things, but
I was just curious, that's was ability that you guys
had. Yeah. Yes, these would be encrypted.
Jeff, what do you think about the system, or how does this impact the local EMS and the police department and fire?
Okay. What I'd like to say first of all is that the system we have is poor at best. And it's not because that's the way it started, it's because that's the way the federal government did to us. As you recall, Pam's statement in the beginning of how the federal government did this, it wasn't, gee, we have a better idea, it was they sold the frequencies. But you can see where that went. They're going to do it again. They're going to sell those frequencies again. It's going to cut down the current radio system that we have, the ability to communicate with not only the central dispatch with our fellow officers, with fellow responders. The system, I'm familiar with it. I used it when I worked for the state. It's a very robust system. It works in most places. I know their testing was, I would say, very rigorous testing. You know, that was designed to exploit. Okay, where are the real weaknesses? But I didn't find many weaknesses in the system already as it exists. I think it's a really good system. I think if we don't go to this system, people are going to get hurt or people are going to die because of the lack of communication with these radios. It might be an officer, it might be a firefighter, it might be an EMS, it might be a citizen. But people are going to get hurt or die if we can't communicate. And I think this is a much needed system. I hope we can get that message out to the public that this is not a want, it's a need. And as the sheriffs made the statement there, things do unfold rapidly. And as you heard the vid, the audio from when Corporal Hasty got shot, if you can't communicate at those points, you know, you feel pretty lonely. And he must have, I can imagine how he felt, you know, saying something into the radio that I need help, and there's nobody there to respond because the radio system doesn't work. Those things are going to happen. We train and train and train for all these other events. We train at the schools, we train at the businesses, we train for all things that we can do. And right here's the weakness and the link, and that can be fixed. Thank you.
And if I can add to that real quick, when he talks about the incident with Corporal Hasty, he recently went out to that spot and stood exactly where he was at when he got shot with an 800 megahertz radio, and he got loud and clear multiple times.
Chief, I have a question. What can we do as commissioners to support you? Or Pam, that's your question too. Do you need every township board and city and village board to make a verbal commitment? This is a need.
Resolution support.
Could we have a resolution of support?
Resolution of support. A resolution of support would be wonderful. I think that would be a big help to, as far as your community understanding that you see it as a need, and realize the importance of it.
Yeah, sort of along those lines, kind of turning around, I think what would be really helpful from the county or from 911 is some communication materials about this. Presented today is great, but way too complicated for our residents, because there's so much competition around election time for their attention on ballot issues. So something, for instance, like a one-pager, no more than one-pager, very simple, English. No, we don't even know about megahertz or any of that, just that, you know, some things that I wrote down. Current system is inadequate. Fair enough. This is a necessary change. 80% of the rest of the city has already done this. It will, you know, improve our fire and emergency response. Mm-hmm. Other little points, like I think it's significant in this county that the commissioners are putting up a lot of money for this.
Yes.
And even saying the commissioners are paying for or already is already designated our known taxes. And in this case, only for what's needed in every one of our communities. Mm-hmm. Everybody benefits. And I think if you get those messages across them, like, very, very simply, that'll be a tool that we can use we can have them here in paper form. We can push it out via our newsletter and via our Facebook presence. And I think that might help our voters get some really concise information about this, just sort of considering this, plus the state, at least the state, a couple of state initiatives, plus mm-hmm. the, you know, we got to consider candidates, and we need to make it as easy as we can for them to understand the importance of this particular initiative.
Okay, and the fact sheet that I gave you, like that simplified and on one page instead of two?
I mean, it's too much. It's just too much. It needs to be one page.
Yeah, that's fine.
One page, only one page.
Understand.
Here's the ballot language. Here's why we need this. I mean, we don't need to discuss about 800 megahertz versus something else. It's a simple message. This is how we communicate. This is a necessary change that we have. Now it's not adequate. It's a public safety thing. And the amount and the other point, I guess, that you mentioned earlier, that we don't have the capacity in city, villages, and townships to pay for this.
Right.
Just those simple messages, I think, will say, okay, I understand what this is about.
Okay.
Chamber newsletter, city chamber, there's lots of social media places that we could advertise this.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, we can also, I think, do if it would be helpful and help the resolution support. That's certainly easy enough for us to do before the election.
And okay. Our chamber newsletter goes out to 2,400 or 2,700 people every week.
Yes.
Yes. By email.
Okay.
Plus Facebook.
Okay. All right. That's perfect. I appreciate that. Those comments. I'll work on simplifying that and I can contact you guys and...
Cindy, would you be our contact person for Pam to reach out to? As far as a resolution that we would support and creating that one page and or getting it to all the necessary social medias?
It would be me and Mike, yes.
There's your contact. Obviously, I think we're all in support. And you mentioned one thing that this, it's not an increase of 0.5 mils.
Well, it is.
It is.
Yeah, I think the message our science is we can't do this ourselves out of our current funds. That's why this millage is important for the cities, the townships, the counties, and the county.
Is that why it's only half a mil? Because the county is using out of their
fund balance.
Yeah, yes. A lot of it. This is paying for the because they're specifically benefit our community.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an important point.
I think so.
And maybe I'll work directly with Kevin Shepherd too.
Exactly.
Getting some of that information directly.
You know, I'm sure the other communities would appreciate that tool as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pam, I was a little confused. If Sheboygan County doesn't pass this, it's still going to happen?
Well, that's the problem. We have to figure out how to make it all work because there's the infrastructure portion that's got to be built out. Charlevoix County has already committed to paying their portion of the infrastructure from their fund balance. The millage is for the subscriber equipment that's needed for the users to actually be able to operate on it. So Charlevoix County will be able to help begin that process, but the other counties will have to come up with a way to get their subscribers and equipment and their portion of the infrastructure and so forth.
So we can
get started on it to the best of our ability between what CCE is able to kick in and what Charlevoix County has that they've dedicated to the infrastructure. But then when it comes down to the subscriber equipment and things like that, even Charlevoix County will have to, and cities and villages are going to have to come with a plan B for subscriber equipment.
So the counties would have had to approve this to get on a ballot, correct? So did Hamlin County, Sheboygan County?
Yep, all three counties approved it to go on the ballot. All three counties are on in November.
Do they support it?
They absolutely support it. So all three counties have the same vision that it's just too difficult for their cities and villages and so forth to pay for it.
So you're new on this position pretty much, aren't you?
Yes, I started up here in April. I've been in 911 for 24 years now, but I just started up here in April. So
what's it like to work for three counties?
It's different, but I really, really enjoy it. I enjoy being able to pull everybody together for the greater good and get things done and move forward, so.
So just a question, you know, your thought process, Dean, I think is very thorough. One page, simple document. Maybe she could be in touch with you and, you know, talk to you, mastermind it.
Yeah, I'd be glad to look at it, of course, but I think between you and Kevin, certainly.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the other counties might have a similar request.
Well, Emmett County put on a fact sheet on their website.
Yeah.
And I know that Charlevoix was going to, I don't know if it's up yet or not. So, and I've been working with the county administrators on it. So, but actually Emmett County's is kind of long because it's a question and answer. I think a question and answer is a good idea too, to hit up like some of the things that you guys are asking about. So I've been working with them on it, and I know that Charlevoix is going to do something. I'm just not sure if they put it up yet or exactly what. So I'll talk to Kevin and work with him a little bit closer on that.
Well, we appreciate the presentation. Very well done.
So would there be a resolution that would be prepared that we would approve at the next meeting?
Yeah. Which would give us time before the election.
And if there's some common language, just to communicate that among partners, it's some common language that we'd like to use.
Okay, yeah, that would probably make it easier for everybody, so I can do that. Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate you allowing me this time and allowing me to be able to answer your questions today. So.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the order. Yeah, you think, Commissioner? You?
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I do have one thing.
Okay.
We have two members of Leadership Charlevoix here today. Three for me. I'm sorry. I didn't see you back there. I don't know if you want to introduce yourself. And I'm sorry that we didn't have more controversy for you to report on. I think you have a requirement to attend a local meeting, am I correct, before the next session.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. I'm Sherry Shepherd. I'm from Charlevoix County Commission on Aging. I'm the assistant director there.
Okay.
I'm happy to be in the Leadership Charlevoix class.
Lonnie Allen, I'm with the Charlevoix Courier. I'm in this year's Leadership Charlevoix class. I'm looking forward to what we're doing.
Good.
And Jean Marriott with Hospice Northwest Michigan. So I just started there in May, so looking forward to figuring out leadership in the county and learning about our counties. Exciting.
Thank you.
Could I just say something? Lonnie, I think you're doing a great job with the Charlevoix Courier. You know, the way things are, you do a very good job.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
And that's coming from a retired newspaper, that's where it's
yeah.
Credentials.
I subscribe to the Courier.
Yeah.
So, my roots.
I'm going to give a brief summary. We just got back from a 3-day conference in Grand Rapids, and Scott and Dean and I and Mike King represented Boyne City, and Kelsey represented Main Street, and I thought it was a very worthwhile conference. It was a combination of Michigan Municipal League and Michigan Planners, MAP, Michigan Association of Planners. Real briefly, these are seminars, and I'm just going to list them because they are so current. Up in Smoke, the marijuana issue. Number two was Amazon. What can we learn from Amazon not coming to Michigan, or in particular Detroit? What can we take away from that? There was a seminar on complete streets, so walkability, bicycles, and cars can all safe. There's hit them with your best shot. It's attracting businesses and developers, creating sustainable retail districts, infrastructure, natural resources, and the blue economy. I think blue economy meaning water. By the way, the five of us, kind of split up, so we try to hit every different conference, and so we could bring them back and share. I'm sharing this with you now so that in further weeks we can have discussions that bring back more details, but I'm just kind of listing them now. 10 ways zoning ordinance discourages quality development. Got into that one. His conclusion was the point is not really doing discouraging things, so we're on top of that one. Code reform, aligning placemaking with codes for development. Social media pitfalls, more parking. Do we need more parking? Well, we just had a parking study, very relevant. The master plan, I went to that one. How your master plan helps you or hurts you. Legislative updates, we have a very robust group of, I guess, they work for MML, and they work very hard for MML, and have our interests at heart, working with the legislators. The sky's the limit. Drones, you went to that one?
Trails. Yeah, drone down. Mike's not here.
Mike's not here. Trail towns, we are a trail town. Short-term rentals, I think you went to that. And Boyne City is right up there with many on the internet. Is we have quite a few rentals that we're not aware of. Budget and revenue per acre. I went to that one, it was kind of interesting. Generating a cost per acre that generates revenue comparing your downtown, maybe $25,000 per acre, compared to suburbia, maybe $1,000 per acre. So that was kind of interesting. Civil discourse, how do we get along, I guess. You went to that one. So, you know, that's 17 different seminars, there were actually more. I think those were the 17 that we kind of focused on. We heard national speakers, Karen Freeman Wilson, who's the mayor of Gary, Indiana, who talked about civic engagement. We heard from Bruce Katz, who's an author, talked about localism. We have to solve our own problems locally because we can't depend on the state or the feds to be there for us. Patrice Fry, Main Street, she's the Main Street, National Main Street Director, Kelsey, and create your local to benefit everyone. It's create your local. And her slide presentation, she highlighted Boyne City. There was 1,000 people there at this conference, and Boyne City got some good press.
Two shout-outs, Jeremy.
And that was pretty cool. On top of that, it was Art Prize in Grand Rapids. And we had our statewide rock stars, I call them, Daniel Martin, Michigan Municipal League, and Andrea Brown from the Michigan Association of Planners, and Rosalind Bliss, who is the mayor of Grand Rapids. That's kind of a highlight. I thought it was a very productive 3 days. So we will share more. Anything, Dean?
Yeah, you know, if I can add to that, one of the other benefits, certainly as the first time there was the opportunity to meet other local officials and city managers. You do a lot of sharing while you're visiting during the breaks and so on. And more than a couple times, very nice comments about Boyne City. Boyne City's got it going, or this or that. And I detected a hit of jealousy in some of the comments, which I actually relished. So there's quite, you know, there's a lot of buzz. Certainly we're highlighted by a national speaker, among the participants of recognition, and the word's out about the good things that we're doing here in our city.
I agree. Scott, anything else?
I think Dean touched on, you know, a big benefit is the other folks that you meet and being able to share ideas and experiences with them. And the new combined format this year I thought was great because getting those two groups of professionals together I thought was really beneficial, and just to share experiences from those different avenues, different views. So I like it.
Kelsey?
Okay.
So, that's that. Anything else on the go there? I think we went through it. Announcements, the City Commission goals work session is scheduled for October 2nd at 10 a.m. And you're going to be out of town, Hugh, but you're going to work on getting us some of your thoughts in writing. We appreciate that. The next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for October 9th at 7 p.m. And the Joint Board and City Commission Goals work session is scheduled for October 16th. So we're taking the goals that we did, a very extensive process, and we got the goals, and now we're presenting them. We're doing one more workshop, and then we're presenting to all the boards and all the commissions so that we, all of us, not just the five of us, but every single board can, I guess, define and work towards some goals that we have established. Anything else on that? Okay. It is 1:09, and I'll make a motion to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks for coming. We appreciate it.